Hello, dear listener, and welcome to the Codex Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Endless Odyssey. It is Wednesday, my dudes, and that means it's time for Episode 3 of Season 1, as we continue reading through the Prima Strategy Guide to Riven. I'd say we're about halfway done, honestly, so this might be a pretty short season, but I'm enjoying it so far, and I hope you are too. No announcements today. Things are going just swell, so let's just get into the recap. We last left the Stranger outside of Gen's laboratory on the Book Assembly Island. Last time, he explored both Jungle Island and the Book Assembly Island, and even briefly detoured to the far side of the Golden Marble Dome on Temple Island via a connecting bridge from the Book Assembly Island, to unlock one of the Gate Room's rear passages and access the Temple Island Fire Marble Dome. On Jungle Island, the Stranger was starting to connect the dots between some wooden eyes scattered around the environment, making some associations between them and the animal noises they emitted when manipulated, as well as the symbols on the reverse side of the eyes, which the Stranger eventually deduced to be Rivenese numbers. He discovered a secret passageway in the gallows cell that led him to a room full of pillars with animal icons on them, but it was clear that he didn't yet know enough to figure out what order to activate them in, or what that would even do if he did. On Book Assembly Island, he was able to gain access to Gen's laboratory via the ventilation duct over the frog trap, and we were treated to a nice long excerpt from Gen's lab journal where we learned that he had eventually been successful at creating a new linking book to a new age, his 233rd age, as he calls it, where he apparently now lives. We also learned that the Golden Marble Dome on Temple Island powers the rotating Fire Marble Domes on each of Riven's other islands, and that the Fire Marble Domes apparently protect the linking books to Gen's new age. His journal included the code to open the Fire Marbles and access the linking books, but without Atrus's fake trap linking book, which was confiscated from the Stranger by the Rivenese guard at the beginning of the story, it would seem ill-advised to face Gen at this time. Gen has also extracted the fifth wooden eye from wherever it originally was located and was inspecting it in his laboratory to determine its significance, which will make it more difficult to figure out which animal the fifth wooden eye is associated with, though Gen did mention its original location was viewable from his survey chamber. Gen also had some stern words for the rebel group on Riven, which is apparently opposing him, the Black Moiety. Apparently, they're attempting to coerce the Rivenese villagers that Gen has more or less enslaved into joining their rebellion against him. We also learned that the Star Fissure, which Atrus suggested the Stranger might exploit to signal him when Gen has been dealt with, does in fact lie under the telescope back on Temple Island where the Stranger first arrived. Gen seems to have been responsible for having patched up this rift between worlds, which he believes would have destroyed Riven if left unattended. Last, but certainly not least, Gen mentions that Atrus's wife, Catherine, is on Riven, as Atrus assumed, and that Gen apparently has her imprisoned, seemingly as a means of baiting Atrus into linking to Riven and staging a rescue attempt. Obviously, Atrus's contingency plan of sending the Stranger instead with no linking book back was not a possibility that Gen had foreseen, though he did remark that Atrus allowing his missed book to fall into the Star Fissure rather than simply destroying it was reckless and could have unforeseen consequences. After exploring Gen's laboratory, the Stranger exited the rear door and summoned the tram to the next island, and that is where we now pick up the story. I now give you Part 3 of the Prima Strategy Guide to Riven by Rick Barba. Survey Island. Well, I'm getting used to the tram rides, finally. I didn't even moan this time. As the car pulled into the station, I noticed a door on the opposite, right side of the tracks. I decided to rotate the car and check it out later when I returned. For now, I just exited to the left, as usual. I climbed to a breathtaking blue-green lagoon, clearly it was man-made, a grisly row of tusks at the edge somewhat tempered its beauty. Monolithic rocks sprouted from the water on either side of a winding metal walkway. Halfway up the path, an opening carved under the walkway revealed an orange-lit chamber beneath the lagoon. The metal walkway ended at a stairway that climbed to a second man-made plateau. This level featured another aquapool, dammed by a high stone wall. Huge rock islands sat in the water. From a distance, they looked natural enough, but close up, you could see rows of spigots jutting from under their rims. What were these things? As I write this, I sit in the shade of a trench-like path that bisects the pool. Everything feels artificial, engineered on a mammoth scale. Up ahead, a sheer rock wall rises at least 100 feet straight up. Map viewing balcony. Incredible. The entire second tier of the island is an immense map. I proceeded up to the rock wall where an elevator carried me to the top. I stepped out onto the balcony where I sit now, gawking. Trust me, it's not easy to write and gawk at the same time. Below lies a map. The plateau islands in the pool depict the Riven Island chain. And now I understand those grid patterns from the plaque in the Golden Dome and elsewhere. Each pattern represents a Riven Island. The patterns fit together to form a square, just as Riven was once a single entity. Further proof. Buttons on a small control panel attached to the balcony railing represent the 5 grid patterns. When I push a button, the corresponding island below fills with a weird gelatinous Riven water that rises to form a 3D topographical map of that island. Before I sat to update the journal, I pushed the Temple Island button and watched it grow. Amazing. With a little of that water, I can make a name for myself back home. Why, I could set up display booths and malls all over the Tri-County area. Fire Marble Dome. I could stare at maps all day, but I had Gen to trap. And more amazing stuff lay on the other side of the elevator. Another man-made lake, for example. Here, 100 feet above sea level. Like those below, it was rimmed with tusks. Straight ahead, across a short gangplank, a rust-colored structure floated in the center of the lake. More on that later, but humming to my left caught my attention. I followed it to yet another spinning fire marble dome. It didn't take long to find the kinetoscope across the lake, but the end of its pier was warped. The scope tilted sideways, so the lens didn't sight the dome symbols properly. This proved no problem, though. I just clicked wildly on the button until I nailed it. The dome retracted, glinting brilliantly in the sun. 3D map chamber. Did I mention the tusk whale totems? Wood carvings of everyone's favorite aquatic carnivore surround the rust-colored structure in the middle of the lake. I entered and approached an interesting device. At first, I saw a simple 5x5 grid on the floor and another 5x5 grid much smaller on a display console with a handle. The grid pattern for Temple Island was highlighted on this console. I'd pushed the Temple Island button on the control panel overlooking the big island maps. Was this a coincidence? I thought not. Easy enough to test, though. I went back out to the balcony and pushed the Jungle Island button. Then I returned to the map chamber. Sure enough, the Jungle Island grid pattern was highlighted on the display console. Now what? I noticed that one corner square was lit yellow. I pushed it. Suddenly, the floor grid came alive. It rose up in a 3D topographical pin map. It did not depict the entire Jungle Island, but only the grid section represented by the yellow-lit button on the console. It was quite detailed. I pushed the button just below the yellow-lit one. Now that button glowed yellow, and its corresponding section of the topography rose from the floor. The handle rotated the map, making it easy to examine from all 4 directions. Cool! Because each square in the 5x5 grid on the display console was divided into its own 5x5 grid on the floor pin map, the entire Riven Island chain could be depicted as a 25x25 topographical map. I played with the map for quite a while, looking for familiar features on each island. Aside from the Temple Island Golden Dome, the most recognizable landmarks were the 5 marble domes. My favorite challenge was finding the dome on Book Assembly Island. Because that fire marble was underground, I had to look for the telltale hole in the top of its cavern to pinpoint its grid location. Further exploration reveals little else up here. Maybe it's time to try that other door across the tram tracks. Tram station. Getting across the tracks was easy. I just sat in the tram, rotated it, and stepped back out of the tram. The door was unlocked, and I entered a long passage. At the far end, I found a spectacular orange-lit chamber, the one I'd seen from above on the first-level lagoon walkway. I pulled a nearby handle to bring a sealed elevator up through a bizarre translucent liquid. I hesitated a second and then stepped aboard. Underground passage. My golden elevator brought me to a long underground passage. As I followed it, I encountered a hooded fellow who found my presence disconcerting. I chased him into a nearby tram station, but he zoomed away before I could beat him up and steal all his best stuff. Yeah, I'm big, I'm scary. Run, hood boy. From what I remembered of the Riven geography, this tram line ran directly across to Jungle Island. I returned to the passage and followed it up to perhaps the most spectacular place I'd yet seen in Riven. Gen's survey room. An underwater room. Actually, more like an underwater observatory. An enormous window looks out to the indigo depths of the lake. Stairs lead up to another throne-like chair laden with gadgets. Obviously, Gen loves that kind of thing. Could this be Gen's survey room? I raised the chair and brought down a wheel gadget from the right. I recognized the fire marble dome symbols arrayed around the wheel on a pentagonal button. A red bracket framed the button at the bottom of the wheel, indicating the active position. I turned the wheel so that the button with the Temple Island fire marble dome symbol, a circle with a dot, was at the bottom, and then I pushed that button. In the center view screen, a green bulb blinked on. I continued this process until I'd matched up each symbol with a color. When I lit the red bulb, I got a real treat, a visitation from the Tusk Whale. He seemed to expect a handout. Get a job. When he swam away, I relit the red light. Sure enough, he returned. I found this amusing, so I did it again. He reappeared, but gave an impatient cry. One more time, and he slammed the glass broadside in outright anger. I enjoyed this a lot. Sorry. No flesh for you today, pal. Unfortunately, the color bulb for the Book Assembly Island dome symbol, circle with a vertical line, had snapped off and couldn't illuminate, and I had no fire marble dome symbol associated with blue or yellow. One color surely matched the dome on the tiny island shown on the map upstairs, but I hadn't been there yet. Nor did I yet grasp the overall significance of this color association scheme, but Gen intricately crafted these associations. They must mean something important. I raised the color wheel and brought down the other viewer. This one had two pentagonal buttons. I pushed the left button. The viewer displayed a small, unremarkable room. I watched a moment. A woman crossed the room and then disappeared. I won't tell you the first thought that crossed my mind, but then a more likely possibility struck me. Could this be Catherine? I pushed the right-hand button, and a lake appeared in the viewer. As I twirled the wheel, the view rotated. This was the shore of the village lake back on Jungle Island. I remembered the periscope-like viewer in the water, and I remembered Gen's note in his lab. He had seen the fifth wooden eye through his survey scope. This was it. A few more turns gave me the answer I needed. Delta-shaped fish is the missing creature? Number one in the animal order. I'm now ready to return to Jungle Island. The Rebel Moiety Age. I've just had the most remarkable experience. It involved drugs, but that was the bad part, so kids don't get any wrong ideas. I sit here in the Stone Pillar Room, bringing these notes up to date, and I'm ready now to face Gen. All I have to do is find him. Stone Pillar Room. Okay, I had my fish matched to Denis number one. Thus, I knew all five creatures, and I knew the correct order. and as I worked my way back across Jungle Island, I understood with perfect clarity what this meant. The wooden eyes were a moiety rebel code. The note in Gen's lab made it clear the eyes mystified and concerned him. The secret tunnel behind the gallows holding cell was a moiety construction, and the pillar-ringed cavern at the end of the tunnel was a rebel gateway. But a gateway to what? I entered the cavern and quickly pressed the stone pillar icons in the correct order. Fish, bug, frog, sunner, tusk whale. A water barrier drained from the far wall, and then a compartment opened, revealing a linking book. I approached and opened it. A power crystal, like the one Gen described in his journal, framed the book's gateway image, a dramatic landscape dominated by a gigantic spherical structure. Without hesitation, I placed my hand on the page. I linked to a cave entrance, gazing out across dark waters at the Hive, as I now call it. Spherical, pterodactyl-like birds arced majestically around the massive window-pocked sphere of the structure. It sat on the trunk of a tree. Had it grown there, an organic structure? It was clearly inhabited. Smoke rose from a vent at the top. I turned to enter the cave. At the far end, an odd sculpted figure held a linking book. I recognized it immediately as an effigy of Gen. Moiety-style daggers, like the ones I'd seen around the island, sprouted from him like pins in a pincushion. Grinning in solidarity, I stepped forward to examine it and suddenly heard voices behind me. As I turned to look, a rebel dart lodged in my neck. Two figures approached, and all went black. I rose briefly into consciousness. My captors rowed me across the water. The Hive loomed ahead. The Moiety Hive. I awoke again on a small bench in a spare mud hut. My head throbbed. When I tried to shake out the cobwebs, I swear my brain sloshed. Whatever they put in those darts should be banned. With heroic effort, I stood and staggered across the room. The door was locked. Was I a prisoner? My window overlooked a cluster of warmly lit huts connected by suspended walkways, much like the Mud Hut Village on Jungle Island. But the Hive, these huts seemed to literally sprout from trees. Indeed, they looked like miniature versions of the Great Hive. As I turned back toward the room, I heard the door open, and a woman entered. She spoke to me in another language, but I recognized Catherine's name among her first words. Then she placed a book and a slim journal on the table. It was the prison book that Atrus had given me. She treated both of these objects with great respect, and then she urged me, I think, to take both, and left. The journal was Catherine's. It began, as does mine, shortly after her link to Riven, but tucked in the first pages was a soiled letter to me, written recently from her prison. In it, Catherine explained how someone named Neela would return my prison book. Now I knew the woman's name. She also pointed out that Gen keeps a combination to her prison in his office. Finally, she claimed to know how we might signal Atrus, but cautioned me to wait for her release. Catherine's Riven Journal. I linked to Riven a week ago. The smell of the place overwhelmed me moments before I could see anything. With my sight only partially cleared, I stood motionless, peering ahead through a dim veil which was slowly lifting. There was a violent clang and bars appeared. I remember breathing slowly and very deeply, tasting the familiar Riven air, but not recognizing a thing. I must have been hit with the dart right away. I thought it was an insect bite at first. I'm trying to remember it all, but it's difficult, maybe because of the drug. There was a voice, a man I did not recognize stood before me. Rivenese, though he was wearing Denis dress. He seemed to be talking to me, but the poison was already taking effect. A shadow crept in, and I fell asleep. There were many voices, but I understood none of them, like hundreds of people whispering. I couldn't wake up. No matter. The dream did end. And now to be here with Itai. It's been so many years, I didn't realize how much I missed her, like a piece of me that I had forgotten I'd lost. She's beautiful and so full of warmth, but the years have also left her with a wound which was not there when we were children. I do wish she were more interested. It seems like I'm asking all the questions. It's awkward. No one asks me where I've been or what I've been doing. This hurts, but I understand it. Their beliefs are born out of ignorance and oppression. They are a gentle people, but they've had their nest destroyed, and now they frantically cling to anything that might save them. But why have they chosen to cling to me? I'm confused. As a child, I always felt out of place here. I never belonged. They misunderstood me, and I couldn't relate to them, but now I'm overwhelmed by an intense feeling that I owe everything to them and this place. I thought I would never see them again, and yet I'm here. I've been given this second chance, but a second chance at what? Saving them? Fulfilling their prophecies? Being their savior? The moiety. Atrus would want me to chronicle all that I've learned. I can at least record some of it. It seems that when Atrus and I trapped Gen on Riven many years ago, our efforts were witnessed by most of the inhabitants here. Two of the Rivenese even witnessed the confrontation with Gen at the fissure, where I linked back to Mist and where Atrus threw himself into the abyss. Of course, they understood little of what they were seeing, but they somehow were able to guess that we had won, that Gen was no god at all and only a feeble imposter, a false god, and that we had trapped him here on Riven. I always hoped they would deduce this simple truth, but their further conclusions have astonished me. Atrus had stripped Gen of his power, therefore Atrus must be a true god, and as a god, he was choosing me, the spiritual misfit from a Rivenese womb, to be his wife. I was transcending into deity and would lord over Riven forever. Thus the Moiety, as they call themselves, were born, a dissident this society, sworn enemies of Gen. I did not know of their beliefs regarding Atrus and myself until 2 days ago. Itai was, for some reason, hesitant to tell me. I can't figure out why. She knows I don't believe these things. Of course, everyone else assumed that I would be aware of my own god status, so they made no effort to inform me. I only realized in a recent gathering to which I was invited. I sat in front of a dimly lit and crowded cave as they told a mythical story of my own life, acting out the battle between Atrus, myself, and Gen at the edge of the fissure. The events had been exaggerated into grandiose proportions. It was offensive, but I was unable to stop it. I was unable to break the illusion, which is the very foundation of their hope and purpose, and which has given them courage to band together and rebel against Gen. Since then, I've learned of other doctrines and beliefs that have evolved, and the most disturbing of which is the conviction that one day I would return to Riven to free them. Some believe that I will overthrow Gen. Others believe that I will bring them to paradise. I don't know how to deal with this. I fight it myself. I love these people, my only real kindred, but they will not love me as an equal, which hurts me. I would rather be their slave than their master. Over the years, as Gen's power has become greater and greater, the Moiety's numbers have grown, and they've become more and more adept at hiding themselves. They now live in a complex network of caves that he has still not discovered. The Moiety, for the most part, have completely severed their relationship with any of the Rivenese that chose against joining them, but I hope they've not sacrificed vital limbs in order to remove the cancer. Even Father and Enant are still on the surface in Gen's domains, and I long to see them, but a dimness shrouds Itai's face every time I've mentioned them. Since this break took place, they have interfered with the surface in superficial ways, occasionally sabotaging one of Gen's constructions or stealing food from the villagers. They wear strange masks and costumes during their short forays into the island's surface, and take this regalia very seriously, refusing to be seen by anyone outside the Moiety unless they're properly attired. They get much pleasure out of the fact that those on the surface are frightened by these costumes, calling them evil spirits or ghosts. It was during one of these expeditions that they fortuitously rescued me from one of Gen's guards when I first appeared on the island. Otherwise, I'm sure I would have been delivered to Gen immediately. I've no doubt that he's now searching for me. Of course, I am now aware that I was fooled. Atrus is not here. I was at first devastated by this realization, but now I'm thankful. He would be in extreme peril here. Also, there is a quiet inner voice, an echoing remnant that wants him far away. I have just witnessed an age dying, gasping its last breath. Today I ventured to the surface to see what has become of this island. I hoped it would not be as bad as the moiety had reported, but it was worse. They have become slowly accustomed to its steady decay, but I was devastated. The lips from which the kiss is wrought has fallen worlds, will fall cold breath. The womb from which the cry released has suffered hurt, will suffer death. To get to the surface, we had to travel through a complex series of doors and passages. Before the last of these doors, they offered me a weapon, which I accepted, and then a mask. I held the mask in my hands for a while, wondering what sort of terror it might invoke in those members of my family who still live on the surface, but I also knew I must keep my identity hidden from Gen's ever-vigilant eye, so I accepted it as well. Then, together, we swam a short expanse and emerged out of the surface of the ocean under a rocky overhang. The harsh sunlight made my eyes sting, but the fresh, rich air was exhilarating after these past weeks in the dank caves. The two men with me were silent, communicating only with hand signals. The three of us emerged from our hiding place and made our way to the top of the plateau. At the edge of a thick and overgrown area of the forest, they stopped, peered through the foliage for a moment, and then turned to me, as if waiting my command. But I could not respond. In fact, I felt it difficult to move. I was smelling, hearing, and breathing my youth. This swept over me in the matter of seconds, but in seconds more, all feeling was gone. There was numbness. We did not stay long on the surface, but it was long enough to see the worst. Riven, which was once one island, has split apart into five distinct pieces about half a mile apart. Four of these have been claimed by Gen as his exclusive domain. Only his ministers and personal militia are ever allowed access to them. From my vantage point at the edge of the forest, I could see three of these islands. They're stripped of their former beauty and riddled with Gen's self-absorbed constructions. The moiety rarely visit these closely guarded places. There is another island, which I cannot see, as it had evidently crept away to a terrific distance. The moiety are very unclear as to what exists on this island, except for the fact that they know it is where the Great Tree used to exist. The forest is located on the island that the surface dwellers and the moiety still refer to as Riven, but they also still refer to their entire world as Riven. This island is where the village is, which has changed dramatically. It is also the one remaining province of the people, though Gen's influence can be seen everywhere. Of course, I know the reason for the fracturing of the island. The moiety do not. Gen wrote this place, and it will die, as all of Gen's ages eventually die. I feel nothing today. I am nothing. I live in a cave on a dying world, inhabited by people that... they're treating me so strangely. They don't know how to relate to a god. I'm still an outcast here. They whisper among themselves, talking of my bravery during my excursion to the surface, how I walked across the island, bold and unafraid. They don't know me. Even Itai is uncomfortable around me. At times there's no awkwardness, and I am only Kataran to her, but at other times I am something else. I'm afraid. There's such a gaunt numbness inside of me. Today I do not feel closeness with my people. Neither am I offended by their worship of me. I do not hate Gen. I don't feel anything. At least Neela is still close. I am boiling. Gen is making and writing books. I wish they had told me sooner. Atrus should have realized this would happen. Of course, Gen would have written all the materials necessary to the Dene craft of making books into this age, and probably every other age he's ever wrote. He's attempting to write his way out of here. We didn't imprison him, we only delayed him. This age has become his factory, and these people are his machines, all laboring in his mad pursuit to become a god, to carry on his noble Dani cause. So far, he has not been able to produce a fully functional book. Atrus has never believed in destiny, but I don't know what else to call it. It's too perfect. It's too much of a coincidence. They hang on my every word, though they do not understand them. I am their hope, and now I have returned. I owe this to them. There is no choice. It's been a long time since my last entry. It's hard to recognize, but I've found the star fissure. It's located on the island which the Rivenese call Alapo, meaning water pool, but is referred to by the moiety as Alatwan, meaning pool of stars. Having once allowed Atrus to escape this age without leaving an open door behind us, it has since been sealed with a skin of heavy iron. A crude telescope has been mounted over a locked viewport, the combination to which was acquired by the moiety before my arrival. In the early days, the moiety, seeking an escape from Riven, briefly pursued the idea of reopening the fissure. They discovered a small mechanical stop to prevent the scope from hitting the portal window. Ultimately, however, they decided against opening it. I hate to think what would have happened to them if they had not left it alone. I've instructed them to stay away from it. I'm almost certain that, with the decayed state of the islands, opening the fissure now would be disastrous. I have heard that in the days immediately following Gen's confinement to Riven, he attempted to determine the feasibility of navigating the stars between the fissure. For he had seen the mist book fall from Atrus's hands into that very same space. To this end, he would have people, alleged transgressors of the law, thrown into it so that he could observe their fate. The telescope, which still stands there, is one he had built for these callous experiments. It is said that they did not die, but what became of them remains a mystery. It appears the limits of Gen's optics prevented him from learning their fate. The starfield beneath the fissure is not as it seems. It is a gentle space, as hospitable to life as a flowing river. This is how Atrus explained it after he had fallen into it, but much more than that we've never understood, and we were never able to conclude upon its origins. But the visions tell me that it was born out of the will of the Maker, perhaps for some greater purpose that we cannot yet understand. I still remember Atrus's words from his journal. I realized at the moment I fell into the fissure that the book would not be destroyed as I had planned. It continued falling into that starry expanse. There must be some greater reason behind it. I neglected to mention it earlier. The unique shape of one of the great daggers which appeared during our escape from Riven, the very dagger that stands vertically at one end of the Yalatwan, had been adopted by the moiety as the symbol of their cause. It is a sacred symbol for them. It's a representation of all of their doctrine, and their representation of me. To deface this symbol is sacrilege. They have their own mythical explanation regarding its sudden origins. I haven't told them that I wrote it into this age, along with all the other daggers. It's strange how such a young religion can be so unbending, even to their own god. I have tried to dissuade them of the notion that the symbols contain so much power. The enemy uses this paranoia against them. They are fearful of Gen's symbols and are terrorized by his symbolic use of the Wark. But they don't want to hear this from me. Perhaps my attempts have caused some of the younger members of the moiety to doubt that I am Catherine. My rare encounters with those who say they follow Gen have been discouraging. I've hoped to have some communication with the surface villagers, but they always flee from me. But I have heard news of some of the villagers' beliefs regarding Gen. Soon after we trapped Gen on Riven, he claimed that he was responsible for the daggers, placing them around the island as a reminder of their failure. In the village circles, it's told that this was a punitive act performed by Gen to mark the beginning of a period of restitution, at the end of which, if they have proven their devotion to him, they will be delivered into a new and better existence. I will continue to try and reach them. The door is open, and Gen is free. Gen has the ability to create working books. In fact, he had written one age before I arrived, but has kept this accomplishment so well hidden that only his closest ministers were aware until now. I'm not sure, but perhaps he has written others. Other news. A few years ago, before the moiety were forced into hiding, one of them managed to steal what appeared to be a test book that Gen had intended to destroy. It had been partially written, but didn't work. They didn't tell me about it until now because they thought it was useless. Back then, none of Gen's books worked, but instead of correcting the problem at his source, he blamed it on the impure wood of the Riven Forest and proceeded to engineer a cumbersome mechanical remedy, a complex series of domes to heal his book's inherent flaws. One of the consequences of this crude solution, however, was that the domes demanded huge amounts of energy, and the related problems delayed his success for quite some time. At last, however, he finished his work and was finally able to link to an age, but he kept his success extremely well hidden. However, for some reason or another, belligerent pride, he has made modifications to the domes which make it obvious that he's using the domes to breathe life into his half-dead books. Perhaps he means to lure us into using the books in the domes. You can't believe that we would blindly swallow that suicidal bait. But he wouldn't know that we have one of his books. The Stolen Burnt Book. Have read Burnt Book. Age it describes would be unsuitable as a new home for the moiety. Must be modified. I will dream. Have requested a group to solve combination that will open the domes. Once open, we can power the burnt book. I do not think Gen will interfere. He will leave the bait. Have begun writing The Moiety's Age. Now must acquire second book from Gen. There's tension, a strain blurs my vision, and nightmares. Neela and Itai stay close. Much has happened. Almost everything is prepared. We have stolen another book, but I'm concerned. Gen will miss it. We have also discovered the combination for entering the domes, but we have not discovered the method for powering them. By powering our burnt book with Gen's domes, we will be able to link to this age, but we will only have access to the domes for a short while before we're discovered. Therefore, we can only use the domes once. I must find another way to make the books work. The gateway images in Gen's books and our burnt book all seem to share the same sickness. If they're not powered, the images are black. It might be possible to clear the vision with only... All is ready. Now all we can do is wait for word from the Moiter-esque, who are on the lookout for Gen, to power and use the domes. When he does that, we will have access to one of Gen's domes just long enough. After linking to the age which I've written, I only have to locate the book window substance and refine or adapt it. Laying this window over the gateway image should heal the books and make them work. This will allow me to use the second stolen book and return to Riven with more of the book windows. We will then no longer have to rely on Gen's clumsy domes. I laugh at these plans. I sound like Atrus. I'm risking my life, but I feel no fear, only anxiety. Perhaps it is the source of my nightmares. The fissure, like a great wound, is open. It stains the riven soil with blood. I hold the moiety knife. The voices grow so loud. For their part, the moiety have complete faith that I will accomplish my task and lead them to a better world. It is the fulfillment of their prophecy, but they are also fearful and tense. I don't know what they will think or do if I fail. It's done. It seems too good to be true. I feel like it's all still a dream. We have already evacuated all of the moiety to this new age. It is beautiful, and I am pleased. At last, my people will live in safety and comfort. They stand under the bare sky, unafraid, dazzled by their freedom. They're happy. They have named it Tay. There's still so much to be done. We are not protected yet. The only way to completely safeguard this place is to destroy the book which links here from Riven. But I do not even know how to bring this up to the moiety. They will be extremely reluctant about destroying their only link to Riven. I share this hesitation. I would be cutting off my only connection, but for their sake it must be done. I am anxious to know if our activities have aroused Gen's suspicion. If so, we must act quickly. Even so, I feel that now we are impregnable. Tomorrow I will return to Riven to see Gen's reaction for myself, but tonight I finally rest. Catherine's note to the stranger. I write quickly from my prison. Neela will return your book, which the moiety intercepted upon your arrival. After questioning her, I've concluded that it was written by Atris for a very specific purpose. Gen will desire to use it, although he may have suspicions. If you can find my prison, you would still need the combination to release me. Gen keeps it in his office. Then, I assume, we're to signal Atris. I think I know how it might be done. Here is the combination. But don't signal him before I am released. Catherine. Catherine wrote of a dramatic confrontation with Gen at the fissure when she and Atris managed to trap Gen and Riven. She also mentions the birth of the moiety and the fracturing of these islands. Quote, Gen wrote this place, and it will die, as all of Gen's ages eventually die. I learned much more about Gen, but more importantly, I learned that Catherine has discovered the star fissure, and as I suspected, it is indeed sealed under the telescope on Temple Island, or Alatwan, as the moiety call this place. Best of all, she provided the 5-number combination for the locked viewport. This is entered, no doubt, by pushing the 5 buttons I saw in the hatch. Catherine also noted a small mechanical stop to prevent the scope from hitting the portal window. Finally, she claimed the fissure is as hospitable to life as a flowing river. After all, she reasoned, Atris survived his gentle fall through its starfield. I plunged on, reading of Gen's crude early success at a linking book creation, his use of the fire marbles to power them, and of Catherine's own success in creating the very age where I now stood reading her journal. She's written a book window substance into her age from which she creates healing windows to overlay the gateway images of her linking books. This frees her from any need for Gen's clumsy domes. One other thing. I believe the monster that I've been calling a tusk whale is known here as a wark. Catherine mentioned it only in passing, but spoke of the terror associated with the beast by these villagers. When I finished reading Catherine's journal, Neela returned with another linking book. She opened it and set a healing window atop the gateway image. And I linked back here, to the Cavern of Stone Pillars. Gen's age. Riven is starting to feel like home. Is that good or bad? I don't know anymore. It's a beautiful, dying world. In any case, I worked my way back across Jungle Island to the Frog Cave tram station in record time. Then it was off to Temple Island. By approaching from this direction, I knew I could access the gate room and use the ramp I'd raised earlier to explore the mysterious upper level of the Golden Dome. When I arrived, I got the fright of my life. As I approached the temple's rear door, it slid open automatically. There, hovering like an orange nightmare in the temple imager, was the hoary head of Gen. But as I entered, the image disappeared. It was probably triggered automatically by any temple entry. Or so I hoped. Golden Dome, the marble press. I proceeded quickly to the gate room, set back to its original position with the open gateway at the rear left. I stepped through the far door. The connecting ramp was still raised, just as I'd set it when I ventured over the long inter-island footbridge from Book Assembly Island. I climbed to the upper level of the Golden Dome. Not much to see up here, just a simple 25 by 25 grid on the floor and a side stand holding 6 marbles. Each grid square has an indentation just big enough to hold, say, a marble. Is that a clue? Nearby, a small switch lowers a massive press mechanism onto the grid. Flipping the switch also reveals a white button. When I push the white button, nothing happens, and that's where I'm at. I sit here at the marble press, staring. My old composition teacher always urged us to use journals as a thinking tool. We used to laugh at him a lot, but maybe I'll give it the old college try. I can't think of any other way to work through the solution. I'll ask myself questions. How long would it take to solve the puzzle by randomly placing marbles on the grid? Well, let's see. 6 marbles of different colors on a 25 by 25 grid. That means, about 93 trillion, 85 billion possible combinations. I don't think raw power solving is an option here. Where have I encountered a 25 by 25 grid before? In the Survey Island map chamber. Okay, that's a start. What information did the map chamber grid convey? Excellent follow-up question. The map grid showed me each island's key topographical features. Did any particular topographical feature stick out prominently? I think so. Can you be more specific? In particular, I recall the placement of the fire marble domes on each island. Okay, now I'm really extracting information. I'm digging deep. I'm going for the jugular with myself. I feel myself starting to crack under the relentless pressure of myself. Do you recall the specific grid locations for each of the fire marble domes? No. After a quick round trip to Survey Island, I have a fresh perspective. There, I drew a 25 by 25 grid on a piece of paper, manipulated the island maps, and noted the exact grid location of each fire marble dome. It makes sense, doesn't it? Fire marbles represented by marbles. It's just so perfect. But now I face another problem. The marbles are different colors. Which marble goes where? This one's a bit easier, although it may require one small piece of guesswork. Where else have colors played a role in your sojourn across Riven? In Gen's survey room. His color wheel mechanism matched colored underwater lights with symbols on the wheel. And have those symbols matched up with anything else in Riven? Each symbol has been associated with a particular fire marble dome. Well, not each symbol. I haven't seen the symbol on the tiny fifth island yet, and the underwater light for the Book Assembly Island dome was broken, but I know enough that I can make an educated guess. Success! It took some experimentation, but not much. When the press came down, a powerful blast of wind indicated a tremendous surge of power from the Golden Dome. Surely all 5 marble domes are fully powered up now. I'll just head straight for the one here on Temple Island. Easier said than done. I had to do some fancy rotating from the main antechamber of the gate room to get out the right rear gate. Then I went through. Thank goodness I'd opened the outer door earlier when I crossed the inner island bridge from Book Assembly Island. It followed the catwalk around into the Golden Dome. From there, it was easy to work my way back down toward the open fire marble. Am I ready for Gen? As I approached the slider lock, I pulled out both the access code from Gen's lab journal. I also took out the prison book from my camera case. If I was linking to Gen's age, I knew it would be my only ally or weapon that I'd have. I moved the slider bars to the number on the scale that matched the 5-number code. As the outer dome closed over me, the inner dome slid open. The book podium rose from the floor, and there it was, the linking book to Gen's 233rd age. I opened the book, and I saw a desolate landscape in the gateway image. Then, I placed my hand on the page. Alright, and that's going to do it for today's episode of Codex Radio. Sorry to cut it off at such an exciting cliffhanger like that, but, you know, I've got to save something for next week. Yeah, please follow me on Twitter at Endless Odyssey, and please follow the show's Twitter account at Codex_Radio. You can send any feedback or questions you might have to either of those accounts, or you can email the show at codexpodcast@myriadtruths.com. I'll see you next time, guys. Thanks so much for listening.